All right, Lou, good morning. I hope you had a reasonable weekend. Okay, so what I was thinking to do today was once again look over the problems that we looked at on Friday. And then a new exam, and then move to a topic. And the topic I wanted to do today was Sobolev spaces and the embedding theorems. Okay, so maybe we can just start with just quickly reminding ourselves what we looked at last time and see if anyone had a chance to look at some of those and had any comments. Okay, so. Let me find those. Right, so these are the problems that we looked at regarding spectra. Okay, and let's see, as I recall, we, so for this, let me use the annotation here. Let's see, so for this first one, the, we got somewhere with that. Did anyone try to work that out and make sure that that all made sense, actually get a spectrum? Okay, so we saw that it should be two-dimensional, so this should just be 2 points along with zero. All right, and let's see, so then on this next one, let's see, so I guess we talked about it some, and we mentioned at the end what it would mean to have a an eigenvalue. Let's see, did anyone look at that one further? Okay, so eigenvalues are not typical, but they're possible there. Okay, yep. Okay, let's see, and on the next one, it was the shift operators again. That's one that I think we went through in some detail. That's a good one to know. Let's see, and then for the next one, yeah, so that one we talked through somewhat. I don't know, did anyone find a simpler way to get the fact that we have the same fixed points? So remember, it's a little bit tricky to make sure that the because somehow that norm has to come in. We figured out a method, but yeah, this the fact that the norm is one there, less than or equal to one. Okay, all right, and let's see. So spectrum of a unitary on a circle. I think we went through that one. Again, that's a good one to go through. It's a good one just to know and also know how to do it because it comes up often. And let's see, so then this one here, yeah, so this one is pretty much direct use of the Neumann series. Did anyone try to write that up and see if they could get this bound? Okay, well, that's one it's good to just practice writing up because you have to kind of go through the formulas and see that you get the right bound. Okay, and then this one here, Okay, so that one is a kind of a direct computation. And then it makes use in number three here of the relationship between the spectral radius and the norm of a power of your operator. Okay, we talked about last time. So the spectral radius is the limit of the norm of t to the n to the 1 over n. Okay. Often it's just the norm of t itself, but this is a case where it's not. Okay, and then the next one. That one, I guess, we didn't really have time to talk about. Did anyone get a chance to look over that one?
Yeah, you can use the Neumann series to compute the resolve into the limit.
Okay, that sounds right. Yeah, that sounds good. And so then you can get some continuity out of that, right?
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Thanks. Okay, and then let's see, for this, what is the last one? Yeah. Let's see. So did anyone attempt this one to actually find? So this is similar to the problem that we saw earlier, right? And it's another example where you're using this formula, but now it's the other way around, right? You're going to use the that this is then equal to the spectral radius. Okay, and let's see. Did anyone attempt that to actually figure out what the spectrum was so that they could complete that? Okay, so anyway, any further questions or comments about the spectra then before going on to another old exam just to see how we're doing on getting better at those? Okay. All right, then let me again bring up an old exam and again, you know, sort of think through what method you would use, how you might approach it, and also, I guess, two things. So you want to know, sort of keep track of how difficult it is, and so that you can identify the easy and the hard ones to kind of skip, and then the medium ones that you'll hopefully use to pass the exam, and also how long it might take to write it up, because some of these are fairly straightforward, but lengthy, yeah? So you want to keep that in mind too. All right, so let me just bring up, it's already on the webpage, but I'll bring it up and also link it. So this is a spring 12 exam. And it's a bit long, it's two pages, so it might be easier to see in whatever device you're using. So I'll put the link there in the chat box. Okay, so let me know if you're having trouble seeing this exam. But otherwise, let's just spend a few minutes and you know, raise your hand or something when you're ready to discuss the basic approaches and difficulty level. Okay, so are people getting ready to discuss, or still sort of thinking through the initial approaches to these problems? Just give me like a hand or a green or something if you're no longer entertained by them and want to start discussing them. Okay, two people, three. Okay, maybe just another 20 seconds and then we can start looking through them. All right, let's see. So let me modify the size a bit here. Okay, so so let's look through these a bit. So number one here. All right, so let's see. So what approach would one take here?
Show that you can differentiate through the integral.
Right. Yeah, so differentiate through integral. Let's see. So looking at this, what kind of operator is that on the function u?
It is the integral operator where the kernel is 1 over x plus y?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and so that's also very close to being a convolution. So you can, so this is almost a convolution. Right, so with a convolution, you'd have a function of, so like x minus y, but if you just plug in minus x, then you get a convolution. Right, and if you want bounds on a convolution, what would you use on the integral of a convolution?
Young's inequality?
Exactly. Which I'll, that's right. Yeah.
So I'm a little concerned about convolution though, because we're integrating over 0 infinity, not the whole real line. And so
yeah.
That means that we should really have like some kind of cutoff as well.
That's right. That's right. So you will have to worry about that. That you'll have a cutoff function in there. That's right. So you, it is worth worrying about. Oh, and you're saying that you can just do it directly, Kyle? Okay, that's probably true too. So you can just compute. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, that's right. But as far as the cutoff, you can deal with the cutoff by just cutting off your function u and taking it to be a zero on the negative part. Okay. All right. And what do people think about the difficulty of this? Okay, so it gets one vote at least for being on the easy side. You can sort of go through and do it. Anyone else have thoughts about whether they would approach this one as one of their first ones? Yeah, okay. This seems to be some... several people would approach this first. Good. And besides, it's number one, so that's good. Okay, any other comments or thoughts about this one before moving on to number two? All right. Let's see. So number two here. All right, so how might this be approached?
That's just the alternative definition of being an H1, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we should have a derivative because we're in H1, and because we have a derivative, we're Lipschitz, and therefore equicontinuous.
Okay.
Hold on.
So you're going to try to turn it into a... So somehow we need to get compactness, and right, and you're talking about trying to get it through like a Zeller-Scholey.
Yeah, it seems like. Yes.
Okay.
I'm not 100% convinced that works, but.
Okay, but it's certainly one of the few places where we get a compactness is a fact, and so it's a good approach. What's another place where we get compactness actually that we saw? Recently when we were looking at operators and Fourier transforms.
The image of a compact integral operator?
Exactly. So that's another, so these are theorems that give compactness. So let's go and image of a compact integral operator of the ball. Sorry, so image of the restricted to the unit ball. This is a compact operator, right? That's another place where that comes up. And here I claim that this can be viewed as the image of such an operator. So that's another way to think about it. Okay, does that make sense to everyone? Okay. Oops. Okay, any other thoughts or comments? Will a projection ever be compact? That's the correct answer there in the chat box. Yes, it's compact if and only if it has a finite dimensional image. Right. If it were a projection, what you would have would be that, let me switch here, that all of these numbers would be bounded by one, right? These k's. But we have this bound that's decaying, right? And so that's the key, is that we have this decaying bound, right? So this will be the image of an operator which has a diagonal expression where these numbers go on the diagonal, or in other words, it's a sum of projections multiplied by these numbers. So it's the image of this sum of this number, 1 over 1 plus absolute value of k, times the projection to the vector, let me just call it v sub k. So we have these constants here. Right, so it's not, its spectrum is different from one. Right. Yeah, that's right. So there are various ways to look at it, right? But it is the, So it is this set here, X, right? And And then the question is whether that is the image of a. So one way to think about it is the image of a compact operator applied to a ball. Right. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's see. Any other thoughts or comments about this one? Okay, and let's see, and how about, so this is number one here. So what about number two? Is that an easy one or a more challenging one to put off until later? No thoughts about that? Okay, so that with that type of analysis, as Gavin suggested, then it makes sense, at least to me, to spend at least a few minutes trying to see if there's some method that'll make it an easy problem, because that's because then. And it'd be worth that time. Okay. All right. Any other thoughts about this one? All right. Let me go on to number three. So this is I guess it all fits on this page. So. Okay. Yeah. So number three. Any thoughts about how to approach something like this? Okay, so any thoughts? So we're trying to bound this convolution. Right. Okay, so if we're actually trying to get that it's a bounded function, so that norm would be the soup norm, right, that we'd be looking at. So we're interested in the soup norm of this convolution. And for the some sort of bound on a soup norm of a convolution, which inequality would be the first thing to try there.
Young's inequality, and on the right-hand side we'll have polar conjugate exponents.
Exactly right. So we would have some sort of P and U, Q, and as you say, 1 plus 1 over infinity is equal to 1 over P plus 1 over Q, right. Okay, and luckily we know something about a norm that will be bounded for U, and so that gives us a choice that we would so it gives us some a start, right? So we could guess that we're going to take P equals Q equals 2, because that's consistent with what we have here. So so that would be maybe a way to get started. Any other thoughts about how one might start on this type of problem? Okay, and any idea what kind of thing you might guess for what this limit looks like? Yeah, exactly. Something like U or the derivative of U or something like that. Those are and since it's L2, there's no derivative. So U is the most likely guess, right? Okay. All right. Any other thoughts about this problem? Okay, and does that look like one that's going to be sort of an easy one to get started, or one to put off and look at later? It looks like someone tried to annotate, which should work. Okay, yeah, that's actually a very good point. Yeah. You do want to be a little bit careful with ones that are too much computation. So maybe a medium one. So the advantage of one that's a bunch of computation is at least you know where to start and what to do. And as you say, the disadvantage is that you might get messed up by some sort of error that throws you out for some time. Right. Okay, other comments or thoughts about number 3? Yeah, it does have a number of details. Although you'd probably get pretty good credit if the limit turns out to be, you know, 7 times u and you mess up the constant. That's, right. Okay, other thoughts? All right, so number next page here. All right, so number 4. Okay, any thoughts about how to approach this thing? Yeah, this is one of those where we're going from an almost everywhere, right, and trying to get strong out of it, right? So there's a few. And so, yeah, so something related to dominant convergence like Fatou is certainly relevant there. And, of course, there is a hint. So let's see. Yeah. And does anyone have any intuition for what this log is doing here? Okay, yeah, that's a possible relationship. Log is bigger than so compared to x over 1 plus x. Yeah. So another, my guess would be that it's just something that's growing, even though it's slow. And so it's a little bit better than L1. And so when you use this Egoroff and you cut off at some epsilon, you can use this log to control the error term that comes up in the complement of your set. Right. Okay, let's see. And so any thoughts about whether this is a good one to start with, or other comments on this one?
Yeah, Fatou's lemma will get you that the integral of u log 2 plus u is bounded by that soup and is therefore finite.
Okay.
And so that gets you that u is in L1, but it doesn't get you the convergence.
Okay.
Egoroff's theorem would be needed to get the convergence.
That sounds right, yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so I think the hint really is very helpful, actually. I think you do need to figure out. Thanks. Okay, and Okay. Any other thoughts or comments about this one? Okay, so let's see, what about number five here? Similar type problem. Okay, yeah, a couple of people feel that way. And what is the absolutely continuous going to give us? So this says that the fundamental theorem of calculus works. Okay, so does that give anyone ideas? If the fundamental theorem of calculus works, then we can approximate our U here. We can get exactly our U by looking at the integral of the derivative.
And then use Holder's inequality to...
Exactly, very clever, that's right. Yeah, so then this is then less than or equal to the one norm, right, of this U prime restricted to 0 to T. Yeah, and then as you say, you can now use a Holder. Okay, and now we're seeing a square root coming in, right? Okay, any thoughts or comments about this?
But they're actually asking us to find the value of the limit.
Yeah.
So I guess we could also bound, instead of using the full L2 norm of U prime, just the L2 norm of U prime on the interval 0 to T.
Exactly, that's right. And so then what's the limit going to be?
Zero.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, other comments on this one? Okay. Thoughts about whether that's one to start with? Okay, and so what about this last one? Oh, sorry. It's just compute and actually, simple problem there. Yeah, okay, sorry. What does it mean to compute, by the way? What does it mean to compute a distributional derivative? Yeah, that's right. So by computing this, I would mean exactly as you say, that I would figure out what it does to a particular function. So find the pairing of this. With some function u, with some test function. Yeah. Okay, any other thoughts about this one? Right. Okay. So then. Now we can. Some sound issues. Maybe you could type in the chat boxes. Okay. So Nick, were you saying something, or just left your mic on by mistake there? Oh, okay. Great. Thank you. All right. Very good. So. I guess we didn't hear so many comments, but after looking through all of those, is there any suggestion of which ones to start with here? One, five, or six, okay. Yeah, I guess it's nice to have one where you have a strategy, instead of just pounding your head against the wall to get started with. Okay, any other thoughts about this exam? Or let me know, of course, if they bring up a topic that you'd particularly like to see in the next few days. But otherwise, let me proceed to Sobolev problems. Okay, Let's see. So I found some old problems that were at least somewhat related to subwoofer spaces. Actually, I think I threw in a few that were related to Young's inequality too, which came up today. So maybe I'll just mention a couple of the theorems first, and then we can start looking at the problems, just like we did last time. So let me share the screen. Okay, so let's see. So there's some simple things, and actually, as I said, the other inequalities come up too. So I'll just mention them and just to get us started. So we have some inequalities that often come up. Okay, and so some of these are related to Sobolev type embedding theorems, and some are not. So, but I'll just list them all. So the first one, of course, is Holder, which works when you have 1 over R equals 1 over P plus 1 over Q. And so then you have the R norm of FG bounded by the P times Q norms of the P norm of F and the Q norm of G. And then if you transform this by a Fourier transform, then you get Young's inequality, which is very similar. And since the Fourier transform switches between multiplication pointwise and multiplication via the convolution, it's not surprising that you get some relationship between them. Whoops. But then you have to kind of go through and figure out what happens to all the coefficients, which is a little bit tricky, but in any case, this is what it comes out to. All right, and then, let's see. So then Sobolev spaces okay, so the main ones would be W, so this is the usual notation, KP. Right, so which has a norm the WKP norm, and it's just going to be the sum. And the point is that you can take derivatives. So you can take the alpha-th derivative of your function f, and then you want to consider its p norm. I guess p goes there. And this is with the size of alpha less than or equal to k. So that's the usual picture. Okay. And some special cases would be the h, which is the case where p equals 2. And here, if you take the Fourier transform of this norm, it is particularly clean because of the isometry of L2. So Fourier transform is nice. For this norm. Oh, and okay, since it's a norm linear space, and we make it complete, of course. These are Banach spaces. And I guess the other one that comes up frequently is W1P is also common. Okay, so those are the spaces. And then there are the main inclusions. Oh, and by the way, I guess just from the definition, we have that if you take WKP, that's contained in WK minus 1P, right? Because they're just more restrictions on the K, right? So it's just added restrictions. And actually, there's one other new norm that comes up in some of these inequalities. So let me just mention it. So that's this C0 gamma norm. And again, we're going to just start with the C0's norm, which is just the soup norm. almost every soup norm and add something to it. And so what we're going to add to it is the supremum over the difference between f of x and f of y. So it's, it kind of looks like a Lipschitz kind of constant divided by x minus y to some power, and that power is gamma. So this is clearly bigger than or equal to this one, because we just added something to it. So that gives us another inclusion just automatically. So C0 gamma is an extra restriction on our C0s. Okay, and once again, we make it into a Banach space based on this norm. Okay, so those are the new norms that come up in some of these inequalities. And then there are two fundamental classes of inequalities. Oh, and a good reference here is the notes that are linked on the page by Scholler. Chapter 2. Okay, and let's see. So, right, so there are two types. There are the ones with low dimensions. So where n is a is the dimension, so in Rn, where n is less than p, the norm that you're studying, and then you get the Mori inequalities. Okay, and it says that, there are various versions which are in this text, but one is that the difference between the values that you get are less than some constant C times, and now we have some power of the difference between them, which is why this this term comes in to our norm. And so that's going to be our gamma. And in this case, it's, let's see, from Fermoy, 1 minus n minus p, n over p. Okay. And then we have a derivative. So these are all relating, these are Sobolev, and so they're relating somehow the original norm to the derivatives. Okay. Right. And if you reshuffle this, it becomes that, well, of course, the soup norm of U is always less than or equal to the C0 norms just by definition, and the one that we're going to be caring about is the one that involves this power here, right? And then that's less than or equal to some constant times this W norm, W1P. And so this is an extra restriction again. So we get that this W1P is contained in these C0, 1 minus n over p, which of course is contained in C0. And whenever I say these containments, these are all containments are continuous here. So all containments that are mentioned are continuous. And that's what these inequalities are giving us, right? Is they're giving us bounds on the norms, and so they're sort of giving us the continuity immediately. Okay. All right, so that's one class, and then there's only one other thing I wanted to say before we can go to problems. So that's the high-dimensional situation. Okay, so where P is less than N in Rn, of course, just like before. And these are the, I can't try to remember his name, but Gagliardi, yeah, sorry, Gagliardo, not very good with these longer names. Yeah. Anyway, GNS, Gagliardo, Nuremberg, and of course, Sobolev. And so these give us a similar sort of inequality. And so in this case, it's that the, Q norm is less than or equal to some constant. And here's a constant, which is nice to have, but it's not necessarily best. Okay, but it is a constant. It's good to have a constant. And times the, again, we're going to be related to derivatives because this is a Sobolev type picture. Okay, and with, and so these P's and Q's are related, of course, and they are 1 over P is equal to 1 over Q plus 1 over N. Okay, so it's related to the dimension. All right, so these are kind of the basic inequalities for Sobolev spaces. Any thoughts or comments about these? Okay, so then let's just go to some problems. Okay, and I put them all on one page this time, but all right, so let me show you that. Okay, yeah, I forgot to space them out and give them all each their own page this time. But so let's just do them in order anyway. So let's start with this first one, the winter of 2008 problem number 5. And yeah, let's just spend a minute or two trying that. And again, you know, once you, if obviously you have a question, ask. And otherwise, when you're ready to chat about it, put up a green or a hand or something. Thank you. Okay, one person. Anyone else getting close to wanting to look at this one? Okay. All right. Okay, so maybe another like 40 seconds and then we can see what two people are finding here. Okay, I put it over on the other board because there's no space here, so let me. Okay, let's see. So we're supposed to find the alphas so that this is, so what would, what approach would people take to this one?
So because this function is symmetric, you can actually just simplify and do on the interval 0, 1, or at least determining whether that function is in W1P won't matter whether or not you use minus 1, 1, or 0, 1.
Good point. Yep. That's
it. And then you just integrate. Okay. So I computed that the LP norm of x to the gamma, let's say, is 1 over gamma p plus 1 to the 1 over p.
Oops.
Yeah, there like we go. That.
Okay. And that's.
And so right. Then that's finite if and only if gamma p is greater than minus 1.
Mm-hmm.
And so now if we want x to the alpha to be in W1p, that means that alpha p is greater than minus 1, and also alpha minus 1p is greater than minus 1.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the second one of those is the stronger condition, and it simplifies to alpha is greater than 1 minus 1 over p.
Nice. Makes sense. Anyone else have any comments or thoughts about this solution? Uh, gamma bigger than zero. Okay, right. Okay. All right. Everyone happy with this? So direct computation. Basically, you have to remember what the definitions are, and then do a direct computation, right? Okay. Just a note for the comments. That looks good. And also, this is the sort of thing to know, just so you have some idea of what class of examples to, or at least to know how to compute it. It's fairly short to compute, but just so that you have examples at your fingertips. Okay, and then let's go back and look at the next problem. Okay, so let's look at this one here, this fall 2009 number one. Okay, one person's ready to start talking about this one. Did anyone have any ideas for how to get started on this one?
Just differentiate through the convolution and then use Young's inequality.
That sounds good. Right, very good. Yes, two people agree there. Okay, and again, sort of raise your hands or put up a green or something when you've gotten enough of that to work that you want to start discussing it. Okay, people almost ready to look at this. Okay. Someone else's. Let's see, how about maybe another 30 seconds or so, and then we'll see where people are. Okay, let's see. So once again, I wrote it on the other board so we can have space. So let me switch screens. Okay, let's see. So, so there were some suggestions there. So let's see. So, so shall we try that again? So I want to narrate, or should I just start with what appeared there from Kyle and Gavin? Okay, so there was a suggestion that if we look at this two norm of du epsilon, so this du epsilon is eta epsilon convolved with u, and as pointed out, with a derivative through a convolution, you can differentiate either one, and so the one that seemed relevant was a d on the mollifier, and then u. Okay, and then using Young, we're going to end up with d eta epsilon norm times the U norm, and since we were told where U lives, so U is in L2, that's the norm we want to be using there. So this one we want to be a 2. And then to make all this work, we need 1 plus 1 over 2 is equal to 1 over P plus 1 over 2, and so this is equal to, so P is equal to 1, and so we get a 1 there. Okay, so that, as I understand it, is how people recommended that we start, and we're almost done, so what's the only thing left to do then?
Just show that d eta sub epsilon, that thing's bounded by a constant.
Exactly. We just need, this is not infinite, right? So. Right. Okay. And actually, so what are some basic facts about mollifiers that would make it pretty clear that that's not infinite? Yeah, exactly. So these are, but eta is smooth with compact supports. So we're done. Okay. All right, any comments or questions about this one? Yeah, I mean, it also has the mean one, but we don't even need that for the bound. Okay. All right, then let's go back and look at number 3 here. Okay, so fall 2012, number 4.
Is this statement correct? Shouldn't it say t goes to infinity?
Probably. Let's see.
Because just physically, it shouldn't go to 0 as t goes to 0, but it should as t goes to infinity.
Okay. Yeah, that seems very plausible. Okay, so two things. First, it doesn't make sense, and second, it's false. All right, good. Yes, good catch. Oh, sorry, yeah, that's actually a good point. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, so that's that is a good point. So I'm actually not sure which one it is because of that. So right, as people are pointing out, there's this t to the 1/2 here, which is going to try to make it be 0 when t goes to 0, and the question is whether it's sufficient to make it do that. Right. Okay. Okay, so yeah, so once again, just give some sort of green or comment or a hand or something when you're ready to start talking about this one.
Because it's Young's inequality.
Yes, Young's inequality also sounds like a good approach to this one.
Yeah.
Oops, switch to a visible color. Right. And are people getting it to work once you apply Young's inequality? So one thing to think about, so Young's inequality is just a statement about LP spaces. But here there's a specific LP space, there's a 3. So where does the R3 come in?
The integral of the Gaussian.
Right. Okay. All right, so are people ready now? Maybe we can go over and just try to write it out how it goes. Either give me a green, a whole bunch of greens right now, or I'll give it another 30 seconds, and then we'll switch to the board. Okay, so let me switch over to the board and someone can explain how they got the combination of Young's inequality and the integral of Gaussian to give us the desired result.
I can tell you what I did that didn't work.
Okay, actually that's often entertaining as well and useful to know. So, okay, so, sure, so yeah, so maybe we can have ones that did work and ones that didn't work. So, yeah, so what didn't work?
So, if you use Young's inequality, you get that the L infinity norm of HT convolved with U is less than or equal to the L3 halves norm of HT times the 3 norm of U.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just have to explicitly compute the 3/2 norm of HT, but what you get, well, we can compute the integral over R3 of HT to the 3/2.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that, we get 1 over 4 pi T to the 9/4.
Okay, the t is important, right? But not the pi, but 4 pi t. And sorry, where does the exponent go now?
Just on the whole thing? Around the bottom. Yeah, either way.
Okay.
To the nine quarters.
9/4, okay.
And then you get the integral over R3 of e to the minus 3 over 8 pi, sorry, 3 over 8 t, times norm of x².
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, I'm just, yep, okay, that's right.
Okay.
And then that equals, we have the same constant out in front.
Okay.
And that Gaussian evaluates to root 8 pi t over 9. Well, okay. Now that you took the 9 out of the square root, it's a 3.
Okay.
And so, in other words, that's some constant times t to the minus 5 quarters. Wait, hold on. That's incorrect.
Okay.
That's some constant times t to the minus 7 quarters.
7 looks right to me, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wait, okay, so maybe this is just my arithmetic mistake.
All right, maybe it actually works. All right, that would be good. So 7 quarters.
And so now that means that the full HT norm, or sorry, the 3/2 norm of HT is then just bounded by some constant times T to the 7/6. Let's see, because we have to take the 2/3 power of that whole thing, and that multiplies in the exponent, and so you're going to have t to the minus 7/6 on the right-hand side.
Okay, oh, sorry, minus 7/6. Okay.
But see, yeah, this is running into the same problem, because...
Right. Okay.
We have something too large for the t to the 1/2 to get rid of.
Right. Okay, let's see, so thanks. And so that should be, we should be done at that point, right? We should get something where it's bigger than 0 and then we'd be done, right? That would be the goal. Okay, did anyone else try a similar computation and get anything different from this? I see some comments. Let's see. Okay, someone got a different answer when they did the integral. Okay, how do you do that integral, by the way?
That's just what I remember it being. But...
Ah, okay, that's one way to do it. Okay.
Okay, I think I did mess up one thing, but only in the constant, because okay. my recollection is that the integral over Rn of e to the minus a norm x squared, so is square root of pi to the n over n times a. That may be totally incorrect, but that was what I was using.
Okay. So you had some explicit formula for that you were using. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Right. So, but actually, if you did want to do it without trying to remember it, what would be the easiest way to deal with an integral like this? I mean, the point is that the only way that the variable comes in is, I should start using this pointer. The only way this variable comes in is as its norm.
Change to polar coordinates?
Yeah, so a polar coordinate is going to give you the growth rate. So use polar coordinates to get growth. It'll give you the actual answer also, but more rapidly it'll give you the growth rate, right?
Almost certain that you need to multiply by a cube, because you can do this integral by taking e to the minus a x squared, and you can break that, you can break the norm into a sum of squares.
Okay.
And then the, it's a product of integrals. So the, for a single variable, you get square root of, I think it's just like square root of pi a or something.
Okay.
So when you take the product in three space, you're going to have to cube that. So this, it should be square root of 8 pi t cubed, which will give you,
which is going to work. Okay.
Yeah, because then you'll get a, it'll go like two t to the 3/2 instead of t to the 1/2. And the other way you can do that is just do calc 3 change of variables in the integral, and you'll get rid of,
that's what I would do, I must say. Yeah. Right.
But, yeah, and you'll get rid of the t dependence, and then you really don't care. You know that it's going to be finite.
That's right.
So you really don't care what the integral of the Gaussian in three spaces. It's going to be some gnarly constant thing.
That's right. So there, are two techniques here. One is to change variables and eliminate t, like you suggest, and then don't worry too much about it. Just say it's finite. And then the other, like you say, is this nice fact that that the this behaves nicely under products. So use the product fact for Gaussians. And just compute it in one variable and then cube it. So those are the two ways that, that one could approach it or try to remember it. So I guess there's three ways to do it. Right. Hopefully one of those gives a good power of t. Did anyone go through one of those things and get the right power of t?
When I did it with 3/2, I ended up getting that the L infinity norm is controlled by e to the 1/2.
Exactly so 1/2.
Yeah, but I could have messed up the algebra on that because it gets gnarly.
Okay, yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
I suppose I'm guessing I'm wrong, because in my case, you don't even need to multiply by t to the 1/2 out front, so I'm almost certain that I missed a power somewhere.
Okay. Oh, I see. You the sign is even such that it's not you're getting exactly zero. You're getting like one there instead of.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Mine's too good.
Yeah. Too good an answer. All right. So in fact, we already argued that physically, and even someone had an example that you don't expect that good, right? You don't expect it to be zero without the t. Okay, so are there any questions about these methods? Maybe people could just spend a minute or two trying one or two just to make sure that they're comfortable with what they're doing and see if see what powers of t people end up with. All right, let's see. So did anyone get one of these to give them an exponent? Okay, yeah, several people, Milo, sorry, is at least getting several times that we're actually getting the exponent to be exactly minus a half. Okay, so and it could be there's a typo. The exams do sometimes have them. So, all right. Yeah, so let's just summarize what we wanted to get. So we get, all right, so we're going to get that this integral here, I of t, is equal to some constant times t to a power. And so what power are we getting? Well, let me just say it's alpha, and then we can work out what alpha we're getting later. So if this is alpha, then we get, then we just, to comment on, someone was talking about going to zero, so let me just make sure it's clear how the argument goes. So then we're going to get that the norm of h, this three-halves norm that's come up in our estimate is given by is bounded by some constant, and then we're going to take that power there. So we're going to have alpha to the 2/3. So alpha times 2/3. Okay, and then once we have that bound on the 3/2, that's going to give us a bound on the norm that we cared about. So this h t convolved with u sup norm, and that's going to be less than or equal to, well, so we have some constant times u, so this c t to the alpha times 2/3 u. Sorry,
are we saying that the 3/2 norm of the heat kernel is going to be increasing in time? Because if you think about the all the LP norms of the heat kernel should decay with time.
Yeah, no, my alpha is negative.
Okay.
Sorry, yeah, I shouldn't probably have done that.
By t to the 3, minus 3/2, right? So like the alpha for the t and the it won't be the same alpha in the
balance. Oh, is there already an alpha somewhere? I would just...
The 4 pi t to the minus 3/2 in front of h, that should add
have I used alpha more than once? I thought I was just trying to use it once. Yeah, this is just some alpha. Did I mess something up here? So
I mean the step when you go from it.
Oh, I left something out. You are correct. Thank you. I understand what you're saying, and I did it wrong. Thank you. Okay, let me fix it. So thank you. So I left out this, right? Thank you. So this is minus 9/4. Thank you. Minus 9/4. Thank you. Okay. And so then, so that gives us our supernorm. And so when we multiply it by t to the 1/2, then we get c times something that's bounded because it's in L3. And then the exponent we have is t 2/3 alpha minus 9/4 minus plus 1/2.
Or actually, is it 9/4 or is it just 3/2? Minus 3/2. because
thank you, three over two. Yeah, so you see, I'm not very good with these actual computations. All right, so yeah, let me fix that again. So, three halves, thank you. Two thirds minus three halves. Two thirds minus three halves. Okay, so now I hope that's correct. And so then, so this is the estimate that we're getting. And the problem was to show that this thing is going to zero as t goes to zero. So what we would, so what would suffice is if this power here were less than zero, then, I'm sorry, we're bigger than zero, then as t goes to zero, this is going to zero. So that's where the limit as t goes to zero comes in. So if, alpha times two thirds, let's see, minus three halves plus one half, so that's minus one, is bigger than zero, then we get what we wanted. Then we get that this two to the one half, the norm L infinity that was requested, goes to zero as t approaches zero. So I hope the structure is clear. Are there any questions about the structure? That's the structure of the argument that people have been outlining for us, right? Okay, right. And then the question then comes down to whether this is true here. And I believe people are finding that this alpha is actually equal to, have I messed up a sign again? Ah, sorry, I should have made a sign error somewhere. Okay, I'm not sure that I want to track down my sign error. Yeah, and we seem to be getting three halves, so we seem to be getting that we're getting exactly zero here, which is not sufficient, and I think that might be a typo in the problem. Okay, sorry about my sign error. Are there any questions or comments about this problem?
I just had a justification for why this, it makes sense that this might be a typo.
Oh. Let's see. Well, I guess because this is how I would approach it, it's easy to imagine the person writing the exam coming to the half saying, okay, half's what I need, sticking it in there, and nobody checking it. Because it's a pain to check, right? Easy to get these exponents off by a sign. Okay. All right, so any other questions or comments about how you approach this kind of problem? Okay. No, I'm upset with my sign error. But anyway, okay. So if not, then let's go back and look at another problem. And actually, I have a memory, because I've looked at this one before, that this should depend on this and the other norm. Okay, let's see, did anyone have any ideas for how to get started on this one? Yes, so Young is a good approach. Okay, and how about the fact that there are two different norms here? How is that going to come into the picture? Okay, that's a good thought. Anyone else have ideas for how to incorporate the presence of two different norms here? That's a very good idea, yeah, Gavin. So try. So two different Young inequalities in two different domains. And as you suggest, because everything is centrally symmetric here, you would expect one of them to deal with zero and the other to deal with infinity. Okay, is that enough hints that people can get started and try something for a few minutes? Okay, should we attempt this? Let's see. Let's see how people are doing. Let me again switch to the other board. Okay. All right, so what happens when we attempt what was suggested there, where we use these two different Young's inequalities? All right, so we're trying to get it in, this containment. So we're going to look at the infinity norm of this convolution. Okay, and so what are the two inequalities that that we'll want to use? Exactly. So we have these two exponents, right? So we get those two inequalities. So I'll just write it down. So we have the norm that we know and therefore are happy to use. So 3/2 plus delta on u, and then whatever we're forced to have on 1 over the norm of x, and, right? So this is, let's say, a, and then a plus. And then it's similarly, we could use the other norm. A minus, and for Young's inequality, we want 1 plus 1 over infinity to equal 1 over 3/2 plus or minus delta plus 1 over a plus or minus, right? So a plus or minus are equal to 1 over 1 minus 1 over 3/2 plus or minus delta, right?
Really quick, won't 1 over absolute value of x be an L 3/2?
That's it.
No.
No?
What is it in?
L 3/2 for R 3.
So it's going to miss most of those because the exponent that you're going to want is going to, when you just balance them, you'll get logarithmic divergences at both infinity and zero.
3/2 is the critical exponent in R 3.
Right, and it's not in the critical one. That's it. Right.
Okay.
Just think in R1, right? Yeah. So 1 over x is not in in L1 in R1 because it's, you know, it's got logarithmic errors at both ends. But as you pointed out, it's critical. So what can we say?
If we split it into two domains.
Mm-hmm. Let's take the ball, say.
Yes. And that's going to be in L3 minus epsilon for any epsilon. And similarly, outside the ball, we're going to have L3 plus epsilon.
Okay, or whatever the critical exponent is, right. And again, we can compute exactly what that is just using polar coordinates, or you could remember it, right? Just like we did with the Gaussian.
So I think I have a solution with this method, actually.
Okay, all right.
Just so I don't have to keep saying 3/2 plus delta, can I write down some notation?
Sure, please.
So I've got P1 equals 3/2 plus delta, P2 equals 3/2 minus delta, and then the conjugate exponents are Q1 and Q2, respectively.
Okay.
And so Q1 is slightly less than 3, and Q2 is slightly greater than 3.
Right. Okay.
And you can figure that out just by writing down the Taylor series for Q1 and Q2 in terms of delta.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what we're given is that U is in LP1 intersect LP2.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just noticed that 1 over x is in LQ1 of the ball and LQ2 of the complement of the ball.
Right. Correct.
And mm-hmm. So now we notice that the infinity norm of V is less than or equal to the infinity norm of, oops, I haven't defined okay, so we can also write 1 over x as a sum like F1 plus F2, where F1 is 1 over x times the characteristic of the ball, and F2 is 1 over x times the characteristic of the complement of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then we bound the infinity norm of V by F1 convolved with U infinity norm plus the infinity norm of F2 convolved with U.
Right.
And then we use Young's inequality. Those, where for F1 we use the 1 exponents, and for F2 we use the 2 exponents.
Right. Oops, and that should be a Q, I guess. Q.
That should be a Q, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's quite clean. That's a nice clean way to write that up. Does that make sense to everyone? Okay, any other comments or questions about this? We only have about 10 minutes left. So I think what I'm going to do is skip the next one because it's a little bit long to read and look at the last two. Okay. All right, so let me go back to the... other page. Okay, so why don't we next look at this spring 2013 problem 6-1. Okay. Which, actually, I didn't box all of it. It includes this hint down here. Okay, let's see. Does anyone have any thoughts about this one? Yeah, I guess the hint is stronger. But I guess that it's also nearly exactly the statement of a theorem that you might have, which I guess is their why they suggest it. Yeah, it is stronger. Okay. All right, so should we try writing out something about this now? Actually, since we only have 5 minutes, why don't we? Okay. Actually, let's go to the other board where we can write down what ideas people are having. So you can. Okay, let's see. All right. So anyone care to start here? Yeah, so the hint was associated with the infinity norm. But the hint that they gave, that they suggested, is a theorem. So maybe we should just mention it. Which theorem is that? Yeah. Oh, okay, so we're going to start with such. It also, maybe just since we gave these big names, let me just mention that it follows from Mori's theorem. Right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, someone said it before I wrote it. Right. Yeah, this is a Mori inequality. Okay, but someone else had an argument. Let's see. So, right. So, did you want to run through that just briefly? Yes, so remember the Mori inequality actually gives you something a little bit stronger, where you use C0 gamma norm instead of just the instead of just this L infinity, which is the C0. you get this extra gamma here, which is a little bit stronger in the more extreme. Yeah, actually, I guess we only have about 2 minutes left. So maybe people can look at this on their own and report back tomorrow if they have further thoughts. And let me just mention, similarly, the very last problem just before we run out of time here. So, oops. Here we go. Yeah, so if you look at this this last problem, so which theorem pops to mind for this one? Yeah, exactly. This is a GNS, right? So here we have the three halves norm to the three halves, and here we have the norm of a derivative, and this is the one norm to the three halves, right? And for a GNS, you want one over P equals one over Q plus one over N, and there's N. N is three, so we're ending up with let's see. So this is our P, and this is our Q, and so it fits exactly. So we have 1 over 1 is equal to 1 over 3 halves plus 1 over 3. So it's exactly GNS. So it's basically just remembering the theorem. Okay, any thoughts or comments? Yep.
Can we just say by GNS inequality, then we are done in this problem, or?
Basically.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. Oh, sorry. There's one other thing. There's actually a constant here. So you might want to state the actual form of the theorem that you're using, right? And this actually, if you use the constant that comes from the proof in Scholar's Notes or standard proof, this constant is in fact one in this case. So it is exactly that theorem. But if you exactly state the theorem and then check that it satisfies all the conditions, it does, and you are done. That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I would be concerned that the committee would want us to actually
prove
this instead of just using the theorem.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, that's okay. That's plausible, right? Okay. But in any case, it is the GNS theorem, and. And so then you want to prove it. We are out of time, but maybe we can chat about that one a little bit more next time if people want to think through a more direct proof rather than just citing the fact that it's a theorem in the text. Okay, does anyone want to volunteer to look at any of the particular problems that we looked at, that we left some hanging ends with in this today? Okay, very good. All right, so I'll start with that one next time, so we can maybe talk about how we would prove it directly, and then move on to another topic as usual. Okay, all right. So I'll see you tomorrow.